Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you.
This is The Final Word with Adam Collins, and this is a little bonus ep on a topic that we've always taken a keen interest in going back to the very start of the podcast in 2015, running out of the non-striker. Now, I must admit back then my knowledge of what is now known as Law 38.3 wasn't overly sophisticated. Despite having umpired indoor cricket as a young fella, where man-catting was so part and parcel of the game that a capital M was used in the scorebook, back then I used to think there was something not quite right about the whole thing. But in 2017, when the MCC rewrote the law, my interest in it grew. Eventually, Jeff and my enthusiasm as well. And this has all been governed by a simple idea. The once has a better grasp of why the law is there and an understanding of how it works, that it won't necessitate a major diplomatic event each time the non-striker is caught dozing. The man who authored the rewrite 6 years ago is the MCC's laws manager, Fraser Stewart. Over the years, he's been a regular interview guest on the pod and in other work that Jeff and I have been involved in, more often than not, returning back to this topic. And with the MCC last week adding some meat to the bones when it comes to non-strikers leaving their ground early, after Adam Zampa's failed attempt in the Big Bash, it was Fraser who we called to discuss the expanded language and why it is important. Enjoy. It's The Final Word with Adam Collins, and with me today from the MCC, it's the man cutter in chief, it's Fraser Stewart, the man who decides, well, what lives and dies as far as the laws are concerned, and he's put our little clarification statement of sorts around running out the non-striker during the week. We thought he'd get him back on the show. Hello, Fraser.
Hi, Adam. Nice to see you again.
It's great to see you. I hate that we always meet around running out the non-striker, but so it is. The last time we saw each other in person, as I described in the podcast last week, it was after a bottle of wine and I was chasing you around talking about expected point of release at the cricket writers' lunch last year. But I know that I wouldn't have been the only one who has been very interested in talking about the, I suppose, ambiguity around Law 38.3.1 as it was drafted and redrafted in 2017, the extent to which that's informed why you thought you'd put out that expanded law during the week and how much of it was simply the cricket that's been on the field in the last couple of years or so where we see more and more of this.
Yeah, it's always a law that evokes a lot of controversy. Historically, people have painted the bowler as the villain. We, back in 2017, we switched the wording of the law so that it was it's non-striker leaving his or her ground early rather than bowler attempting to run out a non-striker. And then more recently, last year in October, we moved it from the unfair play law to the run-out law because it is a run-out. And, it's actually unfair play by the non-striker to leave early, but a lot of people felt it was unfair of the bowler. But leaving all that aside, the law actually hasn't really changed since 2017. But it was the Adam Zampa incident that had a lot of people scratching their head and reading the law. And I guess when you're so close to it and you know what you think it says and what you want it to say, people are going, well, that's not what the law says. So we had another really good look at it and realised that there was a sort of a second way of interpreting the way that the law was, namely that if the non-striker leaves before the bowler got to the and sort of expected moment of release, then the run out could happen at any time. And that wasn't what our intention was. And in all the stuff we've written about it and explained about it, you know, that's not been our interpretation or the way that ICC and other governing bodies have interpreted it. But when you see it written down, it's like, okay, I can see why it's written that way. So we've moved pretty quickly with this, and it's gone through our law subcommittee, our cricket committee, and MCC's main committee. Just to really tighten the wording up, so the intention of the law hasn't changed. So we haven't sort of issued a new edition of the laws as such, but it's rather a clarification of the law and just a slight sort of expanding of the wording to hopefully go belt and braces, if you like, to make sure that there's now no room for error in understanding what the law is. And that is that the non-striker can be run out, but it can only be run out before the bowler reaches the moment when they would be expected to release the ball, which is sort of around when the arm gets to its highest point in the delivery swing. And we've now clarified and given a, you know, a definition of that in the law, so it's there in black and white for everyone to see.
Yeah, so where before it was expected point of release but didn't talk specifically around the delivery swing, now it's got a few extra dot points to kind of spell that out. Just to be clear on something you said then, was it the Zampa incident that caused the MCC's wheels to get into motion with the Laws Subcommittee and the Cricket Committee, or was this something that was coming down the pipeline anyway?
We'd always looked at, you know, every, at the moment, every, you know, few months or whatever, there's one of these things, and we've sort of gone on and clarified what it is. But it was that one when people were saying, well, that's not what the law says, and that, you know, prompted us to look at it really closely and think, actually, you know, we know what we wanted it to say, and it did say that, but it also could have been interpreted another way. And you know, in law, there's no real room for ambiguity when it comes to drafting. So we felt, look, we could see why people were interpreting it that way. Let's just add a few more words and get it absolutely crystal clear, you know, what the law is. So once the bowler has reached the highest point and sort of go through, we don't think that they should then be able to run the non-striker out. The non-striker then is sort of, you know, can expect the, you know, the ball to have been released. But what we are saying is that until that point, in non-strikers, be very careful, and, you know, don't try and steal a yard. Stay on your ground for, as you know, until the bowler has reached that point.
In last year's high-profile example, Deep D versus Dean, it feels like I'm saying like Crown versus in a legal case, but in that moment at Lords, which drew so much scrutiny owing to, I suppose, the fact that it was at Lords, it was a high-profile one-day international and all the rest of it, a lot of the criticism around the law was, well, why not just simply make it when you let go of the ball? Now, I've put this to you privately, but can you explain why it's not viable for it to simply be when the ball is released?
Yeah, one of the reasons is the one I said, we don't think it's right that a bowler sort of almost fools the non-striker, that they've released it and you know, goes right the way through with the bowling action and then comes back and does it on the way back through. We think once the arm has got to the point where we all know, you sort of read the final paper, but you sort of know when the ball's pretty much roughly going to be released. Once the ball, once the bowler's arm has reached that point, I think the non-striker has a fair assumption that the ball, you know, will have been delivered, and so is safe to leave. But until that point, they should stay in their ground, and then these kind of debates can never happen, and that would be a nice place to be at.
So with the Adam Zampa one, just to go back to that for a sec, I think where there was some confusion, Ali Mitch spelled this out quite well, and we spoke about it on the podcast as well. The expected point of release, the non-striker left their ground way before then. Like, by the time the arm got to the top of the delivery swing, the non-striker was out of their ground by maybe a foot, 2 feet even. But well before that, they'd left their ground. And what we were putting at the time was, well, maybe that's a better way of interpreting this. By that I mean that if you leave your ground early, you're fair game regardless, even if it is after the arms come through, like it was with Zampa. Did you give any consideration to that on the basis that once a non-striker has effectively decided to make a jump start, that they should be fair game regardless of where the bowler's arm is in the swing?
Yeah, I think the problem with that, it's quite easy in televised games. I think in a what I call a normal game of cricket, yep. You know, where most games of cricket take place without any recourse to technology, this is a very difficult law for umpires to adjudicate. They've got to be concentrating on the bowler's back foot, first of all, where that's landed, then the bowler's front foot. And, you know, in 99.9% of deliveries that are sent down, you know, don't involve one of these attempts at a run out. And so for the umpire to be sort of having even more sort of part of his view of what's going on over here with the non-striker, I think once the arm has, if the bowler starts to do one of these run outs, the umpire can sort of see that something's happening. Whereas, well, the way that you're phrasing it there would expect that the umpire to know exactly where the non-striker is over there, you know, while this is going on.
Right.
but this could all still be normal. Without technology, this is a difficult law for umpires. And we did look in before the 2017 changes whether there was a different way of solving this law with, calling short runs or no runs and all these sorts of things. And we consulted quite widely with umpires. And they said, look, this is really difficult as it is, and it's actually going to put more pressure on us if there is a penalty, say short run or something. The fielding side, particularly the fielders at extra cover or wide mid wicket, would be there and going, he's left early there, and it's not called, and that would create a lot of pressure on umpires to do that. So we think this is probably the right way. As with any law, there always has to be a cutoff point where legal becomes illegal or where out becomes not out. And in law, you can't really have any grey areas. And wherever you draw that line, the line has to be drawn somewhere, and there's always going to be little grey areas around it. But there has to be a cutoff point. We think that this one is about right and sort of is the easiest way. An umpire can sort of tell where the bowler is in the action, whether they've got up there and gone through, in which case it's too late, or they haven't reached up there. And then, the umpire can sort of see what's happening. The bowler's kind of stop, quick look across, see where the non-striker is and try and make a decision. But, the umpire's obviously not in a very good place. For a run out, the umpire would normally get side on.
Yep.
And that's obviously totally impossible. So without technology, this is a difficult one for umpires to monitor. But they sort of know, when the ball should be delivered. And I think this is... The way we've got it is probably about as good as it can be.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that the MCC laws cover all games of cricket, and the scrutiny invariably happens upon games where there is no technology. So using the arm and the top of the swing as the proxy release point and not worrying about any other variable does give the central umpire a fighting chance in this. But I guess when this all started, we've spoken in the past about Alistair Cook and his backing up in the 10-11 Ashes, which drew it to the attention of the ICC. They changed their playing conditions first before the MCC amended the laws in 17. I wonder whether the ICC, for their playing conditions, might look at doing something that tweaks this a bit more for their games on the basis that they do have technology at their disposal in TV games.
They could do that, and that would be up for them. As you say, we write the laws for the whole game, and so whatever we write, not... has to be as sort of as easily applied and interpreted by people, just two umpires standing on an afternoon in a field somewhere. If technology can help at the sharper end of the game, then that's great. But ideally within the law, rather than changing it. It does get quite difficult when you have people who are playing on a Saturday afternoon in the at a club somewhere, seeing one thing on telly, they think that's what the law is. So yep. We'll try and work with ICC and other governing bodies to try and make sure that laws and playing conditions align as much as possible. We're in quite regular dialogue with ICC over these sorts of things. Yes, the scope is there to do something else with this, via a playing regulation. But we don't think... I think what we are noticing is that non-strikers are staying in their ground a bit longer.
Yep.
As you mentioned, pre-2017, the cut-off point was when the bowler entered the delivery stride, which is the landing of the back foot, and that did allow the non-strikers to actually steal quite a lot of ground, which we felt wasn't right. That was one of the other reasons why the law was changed back in 2017. And we're fairly confident that now is about the right time, that the sort of the moment that the ball is expected to be released is the time that the non-striker is safe to leave the ground. We think that's where it should be, and hopefully ICC will tow along with what we're doing that they have done thus far. If they wanted to add technology to that, that's up to them.
Yeah, that they'd be in a position to talk about what Jeff and I did the other week around maybe allowing the bowler a bit more flexibility because they'll have the cameras to adjudicate when the batter's left their ground. And as you say, that's impossible for a central umpire in a recreational game or something like that. That's probably where people who are hyper-vigilant and watch this very closely. I mean, we've seen Peter Della Penna with the arrows. I'm sure that's not been lost upon you. People who watch this ferociously get frustrated. They're like, well, this is too simplistic. The top of the swing doesn't quite work. But on the other side of it, there is always going to be a group of people in our cricketing community who never accept the premise of running out the non-striker. But I don't know, it feels to me like that conversation has matured a bit maybe in the last few years, where you go back to 2019. I think one of the first times we had you on was after the Ashwin Butler, possibly, at the IPL. And like it felt like back then it was a very small group of people in the cricketing community who had some exposure to the law or are paying attention to it, and the rest had all these antiquated ideas around warnings and other bits and pieces. But we seem to hear less of that now. That could only be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we kind of felt that this was the sort of thing that almost needed a few airings for it to get through. And I think that's kind of, that has happened. We are seeing non-strikers being a bit more vigilant. And what MCC is calling on it is for the whole process of backing up to become a more active, you know, thing rather than just a passively sort of wandering out, you know, as and when it's sort of the bowler's roughly there, but actually focusing and looking at the bowler and making it a conscious decision. Right, I'm only going to take my bat out of the ground once the arm has got to the vertical. And if all non-strikers do that, then this won't happen. And what we have done is we produced a PDF document that is on the law section of the MCC's website that has a big sort of FAQ sort of section about this whole area. Because whenever it happens, people say, oh, you should do this or you should do that. And we run through some of those ideas and perhaps point out why it's not practical and why why we've chosen this route. And we think hopefully that will dispel some myths and make this whole area of the law a bit clearer.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the FAQs. That was really good, and it feels like that's quite an important piece of work here, that whenever these questions get up and get asked around warnings and spirit of cricket and short runs. I saw Mitchell Starc. Again, I sort of didn't mind Mitchell Starc's intervention last year where he said, well, maybe a solution here. And he obviously supports the idea of running out the non-striker philosophically, but maybe you bring short runs in. Like you can see like where people have been inspired to think about it more, even if it doesn't quite align with where the club's been at, which I suppose informs why you've seen fit to produce this much more expanded document through the FAQs on your website.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what we want to try and do is to educate people. And if you think about the amount of effort that batters put into not getting out, you know, particularly in the longer form of game, you know, and this type of dismissal is more prevalent in the shorter form of the game, but still all batters guard their wicket valuably. And this is actually one way you can guarantee yourself not to be out. You know, we all wish we could guarantee that we're not going to get bowled, yes, or OBW or caught. But this is actually one way you can absolutely guarantee you're in total control. And if you don't really run out this way, there's one very simple way of doing it.
Well, having watched you bat, you do everything in your power not to get out, Fraser. And I'm sure when you're backing up, you're doing so just like Virat Kohli and watching the ball all the way out of the hand, like an Olympic sprinter. And maybe that's the way the game moves a little bit as well, where that can be a bit of fun, right? So that we saw Glenn Phillips at the T20 World Cup last year getting down in the crouching pose, and maybe it can take backing up to a whole different level that it's been in the past.
Well, it's nice to be likened to an Olympic sprinter. That is certainly a first.
Fraser Stewart, you do a wonderful job there controlling and running the laws at the MCC, and you've been a great guest to the Final Word on many occasions. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks a lot. Good to speak to you.
This is the Final Word. Thanks to Fraser Stewart for joining us. He's always been happy to pick up the phone to Jeff and me. Over the years, we've been making this podcast. Great to have him on the show again. Fraser actually, after we hung up on our Zoom call then, told me something that he hadn't before, that the first time he heard the term mancad was when he was living in Australia, captaining Q in the Victorian Sub-District Cricket Association. As a younger lad, he was captaining the ones there. And yes, that's the first time that it came onto his radar, which kind of builds on his theory that the term itself, mancad, originates from Australia and has spread around the world accordingly. And I must say, from my days in indoor cricket, which I mentioned off the top there, that kind of tallies as well. A little bit like a double hat trick, that our passion for indoor cricket in the 80s and 90s might have changed the language in the game around the world, something like that. Anyway, if you like what Jeff and I do week to week on The Final Word, you can get involved with us on Patreon, patreon.com/TheFinalWord. We've got a couple of parts to the weekly show in the feed at the moment. There was our conversation around Afghanistan, which dropped, I think, on Tuesday, and the weekly show as as well. We'll have Storytime with Jeff and Daniel Norcross coming up this weekend. There'll be a revisit special for Storytime with myself and Jeff the week after before we head to India, and that is where the daily shows will begin again in earnest. Can't stop, won't stop. This has been The Final Word. Speak again soon. Bye. I had to go.